A word of warning. The following podcast contains spoilers, alcohol consumption, and careless babbling by two inebriated women. Please enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Absurd Cinema Lounge, the place for cool cocktails and bizarre celluloid. It is episode number 15, and your hosts, Tara and Tony, say goodbye to summer with two films for summer vacation, and they quench their thirst on a blackberry gin smash. The lounge is now open.
Hello, welcome to the Absurd Cinema Lounge. I'm your host, Kara, and as always, my sister and co-host is here.
It's Tony. Hey, loungers.
If you are a first-time listener, welcome to the show, and this is a podcast that my sister and I put together to discuss cult films and cocktails.
I mean, what else is there?
Sometimes you need the cocktail to get through some of these movies.
Correct.
Which makes it more fun. So yes, like announcer guy said, today we are discussing two films that we picked individually to represent summer vacation.
So the best time of
year. Yeah, I know. Summer is like kind of coming to a close now. It has been very, very hot. So I'm kind of excited for maybe September to come.
You know, pumpkin spice is around the corner.
Oh, I did see on the news that they were talking about pumpkin. I think it was Krispy Kreme Donuts has their fall lineup or whatever. I haven't had a Krispy Kreme Donut in forever.
But then it's that 1 month and you're like, oh, it's winter.
Right. I know.
Where we live, that means snow.
Freezing, yes. So as usual, let's talk about what we've been doing and watching and drinking. And so what have you been doing? Watching anything?
Well, I'm always keeping up with my Bravo TV, you know, that with all my housewives. But I did start watching, I finished up The Boys, which we'll talk about another time, or, you know, kept current on it. Is also on Amazon is Paper Girls, just what the title is about these four time traveling paper girls from 88 to 1988, and they end up in 2019, and they meet themselves as adults, is all I'm going to really say. But the bad character in it, or the ass-kicking bad person, which is one of my favorites, is Adina Porter, who played Letty Mae from True Blood.
Yes, I love True Blood.
Yes, yeah. And she even wears in one scene like a wig like that. And I was like, oh my God, it is Letty Mae. So
I do want to see that show. I just haven't gotten around to pull it up yet.
It was actually, it's like pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some killing and a storyline. And, you know, and of course the girls, there's no cell phones or they don't know anything about that. So they come here. Oh, also that's in it is Ali Wu, who is a comedian. And she always has the cool glasses.
Oh, okay.
And she has some awesome glasses too in there. So, but what have you been? Well, in drinking. Oh, sorry, I got to sneak this in there too. Is I've been enjoying my margaritas, and the frozen cucumber margarita is the most refreshing on these hot days.
But I love margaritas, but I'm not a fan of cucumber.
It's weird because it's not. Something that I ever thought I would like. And I'm on the rocks kind of.
Yeah,
gal.
I don't like frozen.
But this was pretty good at a new margarita or a margarita joint. Like, that's what they are. A new Mexican restaurant area.
It's so funny that you say that, because last night I went to a Mexican restaurant. It was brand new. Very upscale and kind of cool. But I had a watermelon margarita.
Oh, yes. And you shared a picture.
I did.
It's like a full, like, quarter slice piece of watermelon
on top
through
of
the
it.
Straw on top of the cup.
And I'm not a fan of watermelon.
See, you maybe it's something you need to try. It's like, well, I never thought, up until a few years ago, tahine. Like, before, I was like, what's that?
Oh, they put tahine and salt.
And now
on
it's
the rim,
like, oh my goodness, what are these amazing flavors that I've never tried?
Well, the reason why I don't like watermelon is because when I was a child, I went to a Navy picnic because our dad was in the Navy, and I entered a watermelon eating contest. And I
can
was
just
sick.
Picture, like, is it Woody Woodpecker or one of those where they had all the seeds and they're like,
yeah,
like shooting them out of their mouths.
Yeah, so it's just, yeah.
But I mean, you drank it.
I did.
It was
very good.
It was
refreshing. They had a beautiful patio.
Tara's about patios.
Patios and cocktails, that's my thing. If somebody wants me to go somewhere, say, hello, there's cocktails and a patio, I'm there.
Yeah.
I will make it work.
Two slabs of concrete and a chair, and she's there.
That's right.
Two little quart, like.
So that's what I've been drinking. I also tried, my husband went with me to this restaurant. He got
I was just going to say, what did he get?
A spicy pineapple margarita.
Ooh,
so it had jalapeno and
that's
pineapple.
That's something else is lately we've been trying the spicy, because I've never been one to do that. So
yeah.
That's, I bet that was amazing.
It was
too.
Very good. And it was spicy.
Yeah.
They had a great salsa there too. But.
And what have you been watching?
Well, what I've been watching is I watched a movie that was really just a time waster. I mean, but
oh,
I like
the best.
these films. Sometimes they're so silly. They're from like the asylum. You know, they do these goofy, you know, animal kill films. This one was called Glass Trap from 2005. And it stars C. Thomas Howell.
Okay.
Stella Stevens, who was a classic like B-movie actress. And Martin Cove.
So I love C. Thomas Howell, obviously, and The Outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Tulsa listeners. Anyway, that's a whole nother podcast. But what was this about?
Well, I was mentioning Martin Cove, and he is the bad sensei in The Karate Kid.
Oh, that's why it sounded from. I'm
yeah.
Like, well, how do I know this? And I'm thinking Night Court.
Yeah, he was Kreese.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This movie is so silly. So we have, like an apartment building, and these radioactive ants come in there. And they're big. They're probably the size, like, of a big German Shepherd.
And oh, God.
It's really, really dumb and hilarious. And they attack people, but they look like balloons. Like, they just blew up these balloons that look like ants, and they just kind of grab these balloons and, like, struggle on the ground and scream.
Wow.
And then...
what year was this movie?
Everything's 19. 2005.
Oh, my God. C. Thomas Howell. You haven't been in anything in a while. Roll around with this balloon and pretend it... We're playing an acting moment here.
Right. And they can only stop the ants from coming by playing a boombox, which I was laughing, boombox.
We still have those around.
Yeah. And so the vibrations keep the ants away.
I mean, were they like big one, like say anything, like holding up over their heads?
It
or
was
were they...
not big like a say anything boombox. It was a 2005 boombox.
With a CD player.
Yeah, it had a CD player. So that's pretty much all I was watching besides the movie that I covered. So that's all I watched. And then I spoke about my cocktail already, so that would roll us into the cocktail for this episode.
Which is not a margarita.
It's not. It is a blackberry gin smash.
Does it get you smashed?
Well, heck yeah. This one actually is very summery because I'm using fresh blackberries. I'm using fresh blackberries from my blackberry bushes. Also a limoncello.
Oh.
So that's boozy too. I bought some gin and limoncello from Journeyman Distillery in Michigan. So I'm sharing it. For
Shout
this.
Out Michigan.
Yes. So you've got your limoncello, your blackberries, your gin, and then also a little tonic water or club soda. That's about it. It's so simple. So I'm going to whip this up, and we'll be back with our cocktail.
See you soon.
Have a cocktail.
No, I don't care for any.
I said have a cocktail.
I guess he wants to have a cocktail.
All right, we are back. We've got our cocktail. It's very, very purple.
Yes.
I like it. So let's try it out. So it's... So I made a post. It's a joke, really. But we call it Tony's Tick Meter.
Tick, 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 tick.
And Tony, explain to everybody who does not know what this is, what the tick meter is.
Okay. So first of all, tick. When you have a drink and it's super strong, it makes you kind of like, I say tick, like you're going to, like it's like, you
shudder.
Make the face, you're like shuddering. Yeah. Yes. Like a chill up your spine,
yes.
You know, whatever. So the more it does that, the higher the count, the tick meter count will be. So if it's a 1 through 10, I would say this one, the way it's made, because we did with a lot of fruit and a little simple syrup, sugar-free, of course. But this is like just juice. I mean, and I could taste alcohol. It's not like there's mm-hmm. no alcohol in it, but definitely it's like a 5.
Right.
So it's in the medium. It's definitely one that I think if you drink multiple, it would creep up on you and hit you.
Right, right.
The one I keep remembering back is the sake that we did for the Japanese movie.
Lady Snowblood?
Lady Snowblood, yeah. Was...
Oh, that is a perfect, perfect episode to go back to. Yes, because Lady Snowblood is... It's just the episode where you can see or hear the tick meter in action.
Yeah, and I got blitzed on that one drink by the end. I forced it, you know, but Kara forced it on me. But no, I drank it all, and yeah, that was one where I think I went to bed right after, and it was in the middle of the day. But with this drink...
It is very easy to make. The basic recipe is take a handful of blackberries, put them in a shaker, muddle them, then add your gin, which we used 1.5 ounces of gin, 1/2 ounce of limoncello, and I used 1/2 ounce of simple syrup. And then you're just going to shake it with ice and then strain it into your glass filled with ice and then pour a little float of tonic water or club soda. I will say that when you complete making the drink, the pulp from the blackberries, that fruit will kind of settle at the top of your glass. So you may want to just take a little cocktail skewer or spoon or something and just stir it, because you're going to get through that layer and then it's just going to be like booze at the bottom. So,
which you may like.
You may like, but try it out both ways. So on the tick meter, you rated this
a 5. Because it was, you know, you could taste that alcohol. It wasn't mm-hmm. bad, but it was also refreshing. And the taste of the drink itself.
Perfect.
Was it so like, oh my God, I'm drinking gasoline?
You can omit the simple syrup.
Yeah, if you wanted.
But Tony, I know she kind of likes to have a little bit, so we put a little simple syrup in it. All right, so we are now going to move into our film that Tony has picked out. We're going to start with her first. Our theme was summer vacation.
My movie that I chose was Summer of Fear, also known as Stranger in Our House. It was released in 1978 on TV on NBC, and it did well. And it starred a lounge favorite, Linda Blair, and Lee Purcell, and Jeremy Slate, Jeff McCracken, and Jeff East. It was a book in 1976 released as what I known it as Summer of Fear by Lois Duncan. Maybe I wasn't supposed to be reading these books, but I read these books as a young person, you know, because it had the occult and it had, you know, killing and like people died in it. It wasn't all good fun. You know, they're okay. There's no such things as monsters kind of approach. It was directed by Wes Craven. It also starred Fran Drescher. And if this goes to tell you, everything is always comes back to Bravo for me. Bravo TV, that is. Fran Drescher's cousin's wife, her cousin Reed Drescher, is married to Aviva, and Aviva was a New York housewife. And she was famous for throwing her prosthetic leg on the table and saying, "This is the only thing fake about me." Like, because yeah, I'm, you know.
Oh, my God.
And then she wasn't asked back the next season.
Because she threw her prosthetic leg on top of the table. Right. Instead of-
because they were arguing. Yeah, so it was like a famous scene. But anyway, so all roads do always come back to Bravo. So I thought, I told Kara, I said, I think I'm going to start doing that on some of these movies. But also, all roads always lead back to Murder, She Wrote, because Lee Purcell, that starred in this, only acted in films to 1983. Valley Girl was her last film. But she was in multiple TV shows after that until like 1994, and then she never acted again, but she still does things. But she was in 4 episodes of Murder, She Wrote throughout that series. And one of the famous ones is Lady in the Lake. And then there was one where she, you're going to laugh because they're like, how do you remember? she was a lady that came to town. It said she was married to a man and had 5 kids and he deserted her. It was like a series regular on the show and ended up not being true. She was just there to get his money. But that's another. But anyway, so she was on 4.
So wait, she plays characters that lie a lot.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, is there a theme here? Is this an easy, is she got typecast,
yeah,
you know, after this? So this show, like we were kind of talking about, we're not going to go scene for scene, but we're definitely going to talk about major scenes that definitely stuck out. So in the movie, it opens up and you see a car going off the cliff. And Rachel, they cut to Rachel. She rides horses and jumps them for sport. And the parents are crying and they say, aunt and uncle so-and-so in Massachusetts, in the East Coast, which you haven't seen in years and years and years, since you were a baby, drove off a cliff, which I don't know how many cliffs are hanging out there, but drove off a cliff with their nanny.
But the car... I remember because the car is an opening scene. And
yes.
It's in California. That's not Massachusetts.
Right. I was thinking, But anyway, and they said that the survivor that wasn't in the car is your cousin Julia. And so we're going to go. They're going to fly out there, get her, and come back home. So she's kind of, wow, I never had a sister, and this is cool. And sure, you know, so they bring her, and she's dressed like kind of like she came out of the mountain. Which is kind of what happened, but, you know, long skirts and big black clunky shoes that aren't cute, and her hair's kind of just a mess. And so she comes there. Rachel says, here, you can share my room. And so she's like, awesome. And she's kind of like weird, Julia is, and they're trying to, like, get her to know the kids in the town. And she tells her she has a boyfriend, and and we just so happen to have Professor Jarvis next door that is an occult professor at the local college. So it's like, oh, foreshadowing. But immediately Sundance, her horse, doesn't like her and tries to kick her to death. And so things start happening. Her best friend comes and hangs out, and it's Fran Drescher, which does not have a real annoying voice. It kind of is, you know, it's kind of there, like how the nanny was, but she's not, you know,
that's
as annoying.
She was trained to try to.
Yes. So it was very, you could tell like some parts would come out. But anyway, she's in the big scene where the horses try to stomp her to death, and she's like, I just froze. I couldn't do anything. Then things start happening where suddenly the boyfriend, Rachel has a boyfriend named Mike, suddenly doesn't want nothing to do with Rachel and wants to date Julia. And they go to the store to go shopping, and she comes out with a whole new makeover and shorty shorts, and her hair's all roller set and everything. And she's like, I'm a hottie.
I know. I remember when she said, oh, I just wanted them to make me as pretty as you. I'm like, oh, God.
So she starts finding things like little voodoo dolls and stuff. So
she found a tooth in her
luggage. Yeah. So she knocked over her suitcase and she had a tooth and like it was a big tooth. And you know, she's like, something's weird. And then the boyfriend says, oh, you know, it's her good luck charm. And then the horse, she's riding the horse falls and like goes crazy and breaks its leg and they have to put the horse down. And so these things start happening and she gives her a bad case of hives. And of course she can't go to the dance with this homemade dress. And so then she's like, well, she has her boyfriend, Mike, take Julia because she feels bad. And she goes, and you know, can I wear your dress? I don't have anything to wear. Now, of course they showed Rachel, AKA, you know, Linda Blair in this dress. And it was just like a potato sack. It was a pink potato sack. And she puts it on and it's like this
form-fitting
Jessica Rabbit looking like dress. And of course everybody's like, wow. And she's
did she whittle it together? Like alter it? Like
that she never said. And so she's like, suddenly it turns into this like great looking dress. So they go, and then the brother comes home because the brother was supposed to bring her home. And he said, well, something's weird. You know, he wouldn't let anybody talk to her at the dance because they kind of went there for her to meet boys and, you know, girls, you know, friends and things like that. And they were just locked up together all night long. And so he was like, it's weird. But they kept putting like weird things about the brother and her, like, oh, she's really cute. You want to take her, you know, show her off. And it was kind of like, are you trying to set up your brother with your cousin?
Yeah, that's weird.
And she kind of had like, it's supposed to have been like an accent from like the Ozarks. So things start happening. She getting a little touchy-feely and a little close to the dad. And that was weird. They showed them standing in front of open refrigerator doors, popping berries into each other's mouths and laughing and kind of touching each other.
Seducing the dad.
Yeah, so suddenly all the men want her. And the mom is kind of like, I don't want to say anything. And so she goes to Professor Jarvis's house and she's like, I found these items. What can we do? Because she's a witch. And so he's like, oh, what? I don't think so. And he starts looking at some of the things that she's brought over and realizes, because, you know, he's a professor of the occult. He knows this stuff. So he's like, oh, no.
He just so happens to be there.
He just so happens to have an expert living next door. So goes, well, he suddenly has a heart attack and is rushed to the hospital before he can tell her parents. So she goes, which her hair was not looking good in this. There was a couple scenes where it was like kind of pinned up on top of her head that wasn't so bad, but it was like this big bush, like a bad perm, and it was like short layers, but then long on the, it was kind of.
That was one of my talking points that I wanted to bring up.
It's let's talk.
Let's talk about Linda Blair's hair. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It was like permed, like frizzy.
It was like a bad perm.
And it was,
I just want to give her a hot oil treatment back then. That's what they did.
Yeah.
Cream rinse.
Some VO5.
Yeah. Let's put some cream rinse on that head. So Fran Drescher works at the hospital as, like, I'm guessing like a nurse's aide. And so she says,
Candy Striper.
And she says, Professor Jarvis is awake and he's asking for you. I'll sneak you in. So she's like, wear tennis shoes. So if you have to run, I guess. So
I can hear her saying that. Yeah. Like, Professor Jarvis is talking now and he's asking for you.
Yeah. Wear tennis shoes. And so she's like, okay. And that brings up the whole other thing is tennis shoes or gym shoes. What do you call them? Or sneakers?
I've never said sneakers. I've always said tennis shoes.
Yeah, I think it's like something like as we grew up on, like different times and...
Or maybe time or region where you're from, you know?
So she said tennis shoes. So she comes up there and he's telling her what's going on about, yes, he believes her and everything. Well, just that the head nurse catches her, kicks her out. And at first she fired Fran Drescher, but then she was like, oh, get it together. I guess she couldn't, you know, she's... Like, he asked for her, you know, so I just brought her. So she goes back home and she gets in it with the mom because she's trying to tell the mom, and she's just like, they were going to go on the shopping trip together and she wanted to bring Julia with her. And she's like, why can't it just be us? And she goes, no, we need to bring her. And so she got mad and she told her she's a witch and we don't, you know, we need to get rid of her. We need to, you know. So she says, you could just stay home and we're going to go. Well, that morning, Julia didn't feel well and the mom left on her own. And then they're looking at maps and things like that. And she leaves a, like, she burned some stuff and, like, put it on the, like, burnt the map because she was going to kill the mom, make her drive off the cliff because, you know, there's many cliffs there in California. So the mom leaves her. She's supposed to go with her. And the mom leaves her and goes out. And then Julia's sick, so she went by herself. So she, the mom's a photographer and took all these photos. And it's the classic, witches don't show up in pictures.
Oh, geez.
So the mom is a photographer, so she has a dark room. And she took all these photos of her. Well, so Rachel develops them all and sees, like, there's nobody there. So she realizes, I have the proof now to show the adults, because the adults don't believe me, that she's a witch. Well, there's Julia wearing her mom's nightgown and her hair all crazy and wearing, you know, those blue opaque, like, contact lenses. And she turns into, you know, long fingernails and everything. So she's, they're wrestling in the dark room and she's going to burn those pictures up and, you know, kill her. She's going to try to kill her. So they're wrestling around and Rachel knocks her out and then locks her in this room. Well, then the dad starts in on it and try, and so she knocks, Rachel pushes the dad down and knocks him out. So she's running out and she had locked, you know, Julia in the room. So she's trying to bust out of there because she's a witch, you know, and she could just do whatever. So she runs out of the house, finds the boyfriend and says, you got to take me, we got to go to where the mom was. So they go and they're driving in his car and they're trying to race there. Well, of course, there's no brakes because here comes Julia behind him in the other car. So she's trying to run him off the road. And, you know, it's all cliffs, you know, right where they're driving. They're not real roads, you know. So ended up a guy is changing a flat tire and she ends up flying off the side of the road and crashes and burns. So they see the mom, and the mom was trying, you know, to get home, and she didn't have brakes, but then, you know, when Julia's gone, now everything's fine and back to normal. So that was basically what happened. I know that was like a crazy run through. But it does have, like, some witchy spots to it. And then there is a surprise ending, which is a good thing that always happens at the end, is just to make you think, what happened to her?
Right.
And
I know you read the book. Is there any differences? I know that they had a dog instead of
a
horse.
It was very similar. Everything was. It just those couple things, like with the dog, how
they didn't go into to Julia's character. I mean, I wonder, okay, I want to know more about, like, why was she doing this? Was there her...
Like, was she a 200-year-old witch?
Right.
Or how is she a witch?
Did she escape the Ozark? Like, was that her thing, like, with this couple, which was the aunt and uncle?
I mean, the only thing I can think of is... So she played as a nanny, but she must have met Julia at the girls' school in Missouri, the Ozarks, because I wonder, but see, this is the other thing. She could have also been just a classmate, and maybe she brought her home, and that's kind of what happened.
Oh, okay.
I was like, you know, because they said it was a housekeeper. So how does she become a housekeeper in Massachusetts? If she, because she had that accent, and she was supposed to be from the Ozarks.
Right.
So... how they figured that out.
Yeah, I would like to know more about her character a little bit.
Right. It was everything was very, very similar, just the few different things. Like, she wasn't a champion horse rider. She did have the boyfriend, and she tried to steal the boyfriend. Maybe the text with the dad, like how she was trying to get it on with the dad, that wasn't, of course, in the book, like those types of things.
Right.
It was just more of all these weird things were happening, and she was trying to get rid of her and, like, kind of take over her life. The dark room was the same. I remember that. And I also remember spoiler alert, it's just kind of like it wasn't like, oh, we've defeated the bad guy, you know, she's gone. No, you just kind of got her to move on to something else.
Yeah.
Basically. That's how it was in the book, too. Like, she lived, but you didn't know, you know. So, and it was a good... It was a fun movie. It's about an hour and a half long. I did watch this on Tubi. It was free. Like I said, it was entertaining. I would watch it again. And what did you think? You watched it.
I did. I watched, and I've watched it a few times because it was one of the, you know, it's been around for a while.
Right.
And like I said, talking points for me was Linda Blair's hair.
and that potato sack that she was wearing.
Right. I would like wanted to know more about the backstory of Julia, like where she really came from, and the professor, and also now this just probably because she was putting spells on the family.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they be so gullible, and why, like, the mom didn't see that, you know, this girl is starting to fondle the dad, giving him massages,
and yeah, that was strange, and how she, oh, nobody will play chess with me, I will, and, you know, played chess with him. I know in the book, what they did talk about was she was just a housekeeper, but just a housekeeper who found out, I mean, it was kind of an opportunity. They talked all about, oh, we have family, we haven't seen them in years, you know, and,
right.
You know, they don't even really know what you look like, you know, they don't know photos, and obviously now with social media, you couldn't really just take over somebody's life and not...
Right. Okay, so if we did our rating scale of cocktails, how many cocktails would you... How many of these gin...
If I was sitting down there watching and they were just coming, like I had my own bartender?
Yes.
Is that what you mean? How many I would drink?
How many cocktails, like, on a grading scale would you give them?
Oh, I would drink... How many? Like, what's... 1 to 5?
Yes, we're only going to do 1 to 5 because I think if we did 10 on the grading scale, good Lord.
I would give it a 3.
Okay.
I mean, I think I could drink 3 cocktails in an hour and a half if I didn't have to make them myself. Now, Kara's movie I did not watch because I want to be surprised.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah.
I did tell her, you can watch it here, and she didn't watch it, so... So, I thought about, okay, what would I like to do for summer vacation? Besides camping, I would probably go to the beach. So I decided to do a shark movie. I bet you're thinking, I picked Jaws, right? Not quite. I chose the most absurd Jaws ripoff. And the film not only steals from Jaws, but it also steals from Jaws 2. And I'm talking about The Last Shark, a.k.a. Great White, a.k.a. L'Ultimo Squalo.
Oh, little Catalina, I'm feeling so lonely. I see you as the sun is going down.
Port Harbor is a quiet summer resort with its pleasure boat enthusiasts, skin divers, and windsurfers. It may be one of the most peaceful places on Earth. But in the world of blackness, beneath these waves, there are no days, no nights, no seasons, only endless existence. And a being whose only thought since the beginning of time is his ravenous desire to feed. Port Harbor has been invaded by the ultimate predator.
Coming right at him!
A beast against which there is no defense. Nature's perfect killing machine. The Great White Shark. Great White. The terror begins March 5th.
So I want you just to think about that. The trailer is just like the trailer for Jaws.
I'm thinking, is that Bob Dylan?
Even the narrator of the trailer is the same guy. So The Last Shark is a 1981 Italian film directed by Enzo Castellari. And if you've seen Jaws, you already know the plot of this film because it is exactly the same. There's a summer windsurfing regatta that's disrupted by a giant shark.
It's just feeding time. It's like...
And the local politician doesn't want to shut down the festivities, just like Jaws. The main character is played by James Franciscus. He plays the character Peter Benton, which is like a play on Peter Benchley, which was the author of Jaws. James Franciscus was in Beneath the Planet of the Apes, Killer Fish, which is another great movie that has Lee Majors in it from the 70s.
Oh.
And he was also in Cat of Nine Tails, as well as another oldie but goodie, The Valley of Guanji. And besides James Franciscus, you know, he plays a combination of Brody and Hooper in this movie. He's a writer, but for some reason he takes it upon himself to be like a cop type person and go out there and fight sharks. So I don't know.
And what's the quality of the sharks?
Hold on.
Are the kills the same?
I'll get into that, the special effects. So crazy. And then Vic Morrow, he plays Ron Hammer, which is the Quint character. And he is so much like Quint. It's crazy. He was really hammy. And his accent changes between a Scottish accent, an Irish accent. It's changing all the time. And sometimes he doesn't have an accent. And then a lot of times they just have him looming in the background while people are talking. It's like, why are you creepily standing in the background?
Is he wearing one of those hats?
He's wearing a full-on fisherman hat from like Martha's Vineyard. Yeah.
Oh, not like a cap.
He's wearing like a seaman, you know.
Like a Gordon's fisherman hat?
No. No. Like one of the little Scully caps. You know, and Vic Morrow, of course, we all kind of remember him as he was in Twilight Zone, the movie, and he passed away. He was killed on the set of that film. But he was also in
what happened to him?
There was a segment that he was filming where they were like in Vietnam and the helicopter came down and he was carrying two kids and the helicopter came down and killed them.
Even the kids?
Yeah, everybody. Yeah, the three of them were killed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's a whole like lawsuit against John Landis and things like that.
How'd he get out of it?
Well,
or how did he pay him?
Yeah, I'm sure he did. I've never read the legal part of it, but I, you know, I do know that he did.
Oh, that's horrible. Okay, sorry.
But
back
Vic
to
Morrow
the fake
was
sharks.
No, Vic Morrow was also in a Japanese film called Message from Space. And then there was Curse of the Black Widow, which another great TV movie from the 70s with Patty Duke Aston, where she turns into a Black Widow spider and kills people.
Feel like I've seen that.
Yeah, that's a great movie. So the film has scenes that are lifted directly from Jaws and Jaws 2.
Made as a parody?
No.
Or is this like a legit
movie?
This
was a legit movie. Legit.
And what year was this?
1981. Was it's made, but it was released in 82. The opening scene is the same. There's a group of kids on the beach. There is a lone person. It's a windsurfer out there in the water doing some great moves, mind you, on his board. He's, you know, laying flat on it, doing all this crazy stuff to this ridiculous music. And then not only is the same thing, but there's the shark pulls down a helicopter, like in Jaws 2.
Oh, and so they just summed up the whole series in one.
They did.
With the kills.
And the Quint character is killed. However, he's more killed along the lines of how the book had Quint killed. Well, we all know Quint was killed on top of the boat. The shark ate him in Jaws.
Right.
But in the book, he's harpooning the shark, and he gets tied up in the line, and he gets pulled out with the shark and drowns. And then, you know, Brody, the character Brody, James Franciscus, Peter, pulls him out of the water onto this raft, and he's like, ah! And the shark comes up and takes him to chews him up that way.
No, well, at least he was already dead.
He was already dead. Speaking of this shark, this shark, most of the time, is this big fiberglass behemoth. And it bobs up and down like a bobber. It just comes up. And a lot of times,
like
it looks...
Like the face, like this way? Like yeah. Upwards?
It's upwards, out of the water, like, rah, rah, you know, opening its mouth sometimes. And sometimes it's stationary. And when they try to make, like, the lips come back over the teeth, it's so comical. It's like, oh, my God. You can tell it looks like they took colored trash bags and pulled the mouth back. And then when it's not bobbing up and down in the water for underwater scenes, it's just like a kid's plastic toy that they look like they made just took maybe have taken strings and maneuvered the shark. Or it's like a inflatable. The big shark that, you know, is out of the water half the time reminds me of Jabba Jaw. Do you remember the cartoon character
yes.
Jabba Jaw? It looks just like that. It looks like it's smiling, like, hello.
Oh, my God.
It's hilarious. When the shark opens its mouth, there's no, like, opening in the back of the mouth to make it look like if it ate you, it would swallow. It's just like, it's just a big hole.
Oh, God. It's so funny because I'm looking at a photo. I had to look this up.
Did you see it?
And it's like a white face. Like, it looks like... It's so fakey looking, but it's... What's the one with the legs and the guy's face right there? Is that when he's getting ate?
That's what one of the people are getting eaten.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eaten. Whatever. Oh, my God. Okay, so you guys are going to have to check this out, this movie out.
Yes, that's when the lips were drawn back.
And it looks so tiny. I guess we're trying to, like, compare it to Jaws' mouth.
Yes.
Because these look like tiny teeth.
Yeah, they're like a great white shark, but it's got little baby teeth.
And then there's this one photo that they have the shark with its mouth open, and it says Carnage County or Carnage Count.
Okay. Is that like on a YouTube channel?
Yeah.
So they also try to spice it up a little bit and add some stock footage of great white sharks, and they don't match up in the scenes at all. It's so comical. And then there is an interesting story about this film. So the film opened up. It had a U.S. release to about 300 theaters. And it was in Texas, Michigan, Louisiana, and South California, Southern California. Now, before the release of this film, like I said, it was March 5th, 1982, Universal Studios got wind of this. And they tried to block this.
Yeah, how did they not see this?
They tried to block it from being released. However, the request was initially denied. So the film opened, and they appealed this, and on April 2nd, 1982, Universal proceeded with the appeal, and the federal judge deemed the film too similar to Jaws, and they ordered the film to be canceled.
Huh.
So they pulled it. Universal also filed more lawsuits globally, just to kind of stop the film's distribution in Europe and other countries.
Wow. This,
yeah, the film seemed to have been pretty popular with moviegoers when it opened up in the States. It kind of grossed $3 million in that short 4 weeks that it was open.
Huh.
And, you know, only 300 theaters for, like, a couple weeks. And it had a pretty good... It had a big ad campaign as well. So that this type of turnout showed Universal Studios that people were still interested in shark films.
Uh-huh.
So they kind of moved through going forward with making Jaws 3, which came out in 83. So, yeah, that was a horrible, horrible movie. Oh, God. I will tell you, though, if it's on, I'll still watch it just to laugh.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it's horrible. So, and for a long time, you could not see this film. You could not see it.
Oh, unless that was okay.
Unless you found a bootleg DVD. And, of course, people like me back in the day, you hear about banned movies.
So you're like, I got to watch this.
I've got to find this movie. I'm going to whatever. I had friends in, like, England and other, we would do movie swaps. And this was one of the movies I got. And there was an official release back in 2013. Yes. I had to look at my notes real quick. So 2013, it was released on DVD through Retro Media Distributions, and only 500 copies were made. So that was it. They, you know, didn't make any more. And because Universal still bans this film, which is, this just, it still blows my mind. In 2009, Severn Films, the popular company who restores a lot of cult classics onto Blu-ray and DVD, they tried to negotiate a Region 1 DVD with Universal, and they denied it. They're still like, nope. And then a few years ago, there was also a screening of Castellari's film Inglourious Basterds, and that was a film that was inspired Tarantino to do his film. Mm-hmm. So, but they wanted to do a double feature. They were doing this this screening at the Beverly. It's kind of a popular place. So they wanted to do a double feature. They wanted to add The Last Shark into this double feature. They had to ask permission from Universal, and Universal again denied this one.
Oh, wow.
So my question is, I can see how this was a problem back in 82. Too close to the Jaws films. But we're talking now how many years? And in my opinion, I don't understand after all these years Universal still has a problem with this, because Jaws is a special film. And honestly, in my opinion, the public does not and would not ever think that The Last Shark could compete with this film.
Right.
And I can, you know, I would love to have this on Blu-ray with the special features and possibly a commentary. However, I don't think that we ever will, because Universal has this grudge or whatever against this film. It's just a silly film. It does really lift from the film. The scenes are like scene for scene on some of them. So I can see why they, you know, at the time. Luckily, you can watch this. It's streaming on Freeview, which is the IMDb TV app. They just changed it over to Freeview. Also, Tubi and YouTube. You can watch they call it a special edition, widescreen edition, something like that, on Amazon that you can rent. But I don't know if it's worth renting for that. I mean, I'm not sure. I didn't see the difference. I would like to see a side-by-side comparison, but what I would basically say is, if you're a fan of Italian knockoffs, killer shark movies, you will like this film. So my recommendation is go ahead and grab some friends and some drinks and sit down and just laugh your ass off. That shark is so freaking comical. And
that's the best.
Yeah. And the scene with the helicopter just cracks me up, because the politician guy, that's how he gets killed. He falls in the water. The helicopter comes down and picks him up. He's grabbing onto it. His legs are kicking and dangling. The shark comes out of the water.
Oh, so it was pretty high.
Yeah. And the guy's body breaks before the shark bites down. His lower half breaks off before the shark
the
bites.
The dummy kind of.
Yeah. So yeah, it's hilarious. I mean, it is so funny.
And if I was a pilot, that's when you're like, go right up. I was like, oh well.
Yeah. The scene with the helicopter in Jaws 2
was more believable.
Was a much better, but
because it was actually the helicopter was like on the water,
right?
Not in the air,
right? But speaking of Jaws for a second, I just seen this. I don't know if anybody has ever seen this before. Speaking of crazy Jaws films, Jaws 4, The Revenge, was, I think, the worst shark design of all of them. It was horrible. I just seen on the YouTube channel for the Daily Jaws, I follow them on Twitter, and they kind of always give updates and things like that. But they had posted, somebody had gotten a hold of a scene from that, and they put a CGI shark in place of that craptastic one and did a side-by-side comparison to show that it was a little more intense. Because I think the acting with the actor and the swimming and the, you know, things like that was okay. But it was that shark that was so silly. I mean, sharks just don't float. and snap their jaws while they're trying to get
right.
This shark was actually swimming and, you know.
Can't wait to eat somebody.
Yeah, right. So I would say if you go to the Daily Jaws' YouTube channel, look for that. Because I found it very, very interesting how they did a side-by-side. I think that they should try to do a different one with Jaws 3. So you got the floating turd shark just kind of
that's what I was like
floating
was
there
thinking, and then like
and they're screaming in that room
and then its nose just breaks the glass
so I think that they should try that but
yeah
so you did not watch this film
but it sounds like I missed out
and so I think you should go and watch
I'm gonna watch these clips on YouTube
watch the clips and when you watch you're like that is just that's the same as, they got the wife and the husband.
Two kids,
yes. Well, there's a daughter, yes. And she gets her leg bitten off, and he's talking about, I remember when you were roller skating or whatever. I'm like, that's kind of not a, and it probably wasn't roller skating. I think it was, but I can't remember offhand now.
How did she lose her leg?
The shark bit it off.
Oh, like recently, or was it in the movie?
In the movie.
Oh, okay. Or I should say, in the past or like in the movie?
Oh, no. Yeah, during the carnage. The shark did it.
Carnage.
Oh. Oh, my gosh. So how many cocktails? I think with this one, you would be drinking them down fast. But for a grading scale on how good it is, that's kind of what I'm going for here. Out of 5 cocktails.
Could you, how is this like an hour and a half long? How many can you drink? If you were having,
I probably could pound 4 down, but on the scale of how good the movie is how many cocktails? 2, 3.
Yeah,
you could really drink
because you're probably going to be like reacting and laughing at the movie more.
Yeah, and
then MSP3 you just need one of those hats with the straw, and then you'd be like just drinking it. Woo!
And MST3K did a riff on this movie.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
So that, and I've seen that one. That is hilarious. So. I would say watch both of them, because I always like to watch the bots.
Yeah.
Do it. I think Mike was the one that did this one in the bots.
Well, that is wrapping it up. Our second one.
Well, I had fun doing this episode.
Me too. I think it was kind of cool to do the two movies, like, this is what I saw, know.
Exactly. Oh, one other
thing. A witch off is always good.
I know,
but it was only one witch.
It was fun to do that little witch off movie, even though it wasn't a witch off movie. It was one witch.
It was one witch offing, trying to off the others. Okay.
All right. We also got to put together our Halloween episode.
Oh,
So much work. But we're trying to make things a little bit better, and we're trying to, like me, I'm trying to get a new microphone because when I edit the audio for these podcasts, my mic sounds horrible. Sorry, everybody. Sorry. But anyway, let's leave this because we're starting to just ramble on.
Let's drink some more.
I know, right?
Announcer guy take us home.
Yep. Announcer guy will take us home. You guys have a really, really great weekend, weekday. Whenever you listen to this, have a great time afterwards.
And don't forget, drop us a message.
Yes, we want to hear what you think. Subscribe, share, let us know. Love you guys. We will talk to you later.
Bye, loungers.
Bye.
You have been listening to the Absurd Cinema Lounge with your hosts, Kara and Tony. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to review and subscribe to the show. Send us your feedback and recommendations by calling or texting the lounge at 815-714-9326 or email absurdcinemalounge@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Absurd Cinema Lounge. The music for today's episode, Another Pineapple Please by the Fly Guy 5, and Want to Move My Feet by Someway. Our featured drink for this episode was a Blackberry Gin Smash. Be sure to join us for episode 16, where the ladies will discuss
a 1988 black comedy, Heather. I'm announcer guy telling you, enjoy the last days of summer. The lounge is now closed.